You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, I need you to subscribe to Locked On Mets wherever you get your podcasts. Also, don't forget, when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. So as spring training begins, players begin to speak to the media, and we are starting to hear some interesting things from current and former Mets. On today's show, in the first half, I'm going to talk about Seth Lugo. He thinks that the Houston Astros and their sign-stealing scandal were part of the factor that pushed him out of the Mets rotation and into the bullpen. So I'm going to dissect that. And then later on in the show, Zach Wheeler had some comments that were a little bit against Mets management. So I want to talk about that as well. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, check me out on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Alright, so first let's talk about Seth Lugo. Like many pitchers, he feels like he was victimized by this sign-stealing scandal. He was talking about a start where he got roughed up in Houston in 2017 at the height of this scandal, and he said this, quote, "I pitched that inning, I was making good pitches, and when you execute a pitch, you shouldn't give up good hits. Maybe a little bloop or a ground ball up the middle or something, but their whole approach changed. If I could have finished a shutout against the Astros that game, who knows where I would be." Now, I do want to say, as a preface, Seth Lugo has been far better as a reliever in his career than he has as a starter. Personally, I think that he belongs in the bullpen. I know he wants to start. Maybe he exceeds in that role in some capacity, but he's dominant out of the pen. In 31 career starts, Lugo has a 4.06 ERA. And you have to remember, he was outstanding that first year out of the Mets rotation in 2016 when the Mets needed some guys to fill in with the injuries, and Lugo and Gesellman stepped up and helped the Mets get to the playoffs. So those numbers have gone down since that point. He also has 138 strikeouts and 168 and a third innings pitched. Compare that to his numbers out of the pen. He has a 2.52 ERA as a reliever with 199 strikeouts and 178 and a third innings pitched. So the stuff gets better out of the pen. But let's look back at this start he's talking about. September 2nd in Houston, and I will say Lugo had a 4.85 ERA across 12 starts going into that game with one three-inning relief appearance, factoring into that ERA as well. But in that game, he had a shutout through five innings. He had allowed five hits, but no sustained rallies. The sixth inning, maybe they decoded the signs at that point. He gives up a hit, he walks a batter, he gives up two more singles. Two-run score, he's out of the game. Hansel Robles comes in. He gives up both of those inherited runners. And so Lugo's final line is five innings pitched, four earned runs, two walks, and six strikeouts. So, not the best effort, but not a dramatic 10-run outing. That's what I thought I might see when I looked this up. So, I'm not going to discredit his beliefs, but it's just something to think about. Mentally, does that get to him? Does that affect him moving forward? Well, in his next start, he pitched six shutout innings against the Cincinnati Reds. And he won. So I don't know if it necessarily carried over. The following start, he got rocked in Wrigley Field against a really good lineup who scored eight runs off of him, seven of them earned, and he didn't make it past three innings. So with all that being said, I still believe Seth Lugo is a better reliever than he is a starter. His stuff has gotten great. I don't know if that is him evolving as a pitcher or if that's because in the bullpen, he can really maximize his effort. They might not be able to pitch in back-to-back days and all that, but he is so dominant out of the pen. And the Mets bullpen simply needs him. But he has a desire to be a starting pitcher. And what this story tells me is that what the Astros did and why it's so wrong, and the more you think about it, the more harmful it is. And really, butterfly effect isn't the best word or best description, but the ripple effects from this just span a lot farther than I think any of us really imagined when we first heard it on the surface. Because these pitchers are in a vulnerable position with their money and contracts and everything and their status on the line as the opposition knows what's coming. And that's wrong. And for someone like Seth Lugo, who maybe is destined to be in the bullpen, and that's where he can have a really long and successful career, if he, in his heart, wants to be a starting pitcher, he is going to find any excuse or anything in his mind to build into that narrative. And now he has this one instance back in 2017 where things were a little fishy then, but now he has confirmation that the other team cheated him, and he can now use that as evidence to support his own case in his mind that he should be a starting pitcher. And had they not screwed him over, maybe he'd still be in the rotation. While I don't necessarily agree with that notion that that one game is what determined his fate in the starting rotation when he had a lot of other starts that year that didn't quite go as planned, and that was not the only time, I can completely empathize that sentiment. I can understand where he's coming from, and it's just unfortunate that he can now play that what-if game in his mind. That when he faces the Astros, if he goes a complete game shutout, that game, the rest of his career could be different. He could have had the last 3 years in the starting rotation. He could have been an all-star. He could be in line for a nine-figure contract like the one Zach Wheeler just landed. But now he'll never know. And so it's unfortunate, and that is one of the ramifications from all of this sign-stealing stuff that the Astros did. And I'm not going to touch on it, but the apology was really weak. I'm not sure what Locked On Astros has to say about that. I'm not sure if they're talking about that on Locked On MLB, but I'll tell you, they did not do themselves any favors as the Astros met with the media in spring training. Now, I just referenced that contract by Zach Wheeler, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute and his comments about the Mets front office. But first, if you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Mets is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Mets fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Mets fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. And let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. The biggest loss the Mets have to overcome this season is Zach Wheeler leaving the rotation and signing with the Philadelphia Phillies on a 5-year, $118 million deal. But Wheeler could have still been a Met. And that is the unfortunate thing, as it seems like he was motivated to stay a part of this team. In a story by Greg Joyce of the New York Post, Wheeler talks about how there was an understanding that he would circle back to the Mets after he tested the market and basically try to come to terms on a deal with the Mets if they were willing to give a competitive offer. He said before signing with Philadelphia, he circles back to the Mets and, quote, "it was basically just crickets when I did." Wheeler said he wasn't surprised because, quote, "it's them, it's how they roll." Wheeler went on to talk about how he still was in good standing with the organization, was thankful for them, all that stuff, the politically correct stuff, but basically said the only offer that they gave him was the qualifying offer, which is not necessarily a sincere offer when you consider the fact that they're just trying to get a draft pick. He says, quote, "obviously everything starts at the top and it filters down. Whether it be somebody's fault or not, it starts at the top and goes down. Maybe the top gives them the okay, but the lower down, they don't want to do something, or maybe up top, they don't want to give you the opportunity to do something, but everybody else wants to do it. That's kind of how it was there at certain points. Everything was kind of jumpy." I like this quote. Because certain people would want something and others wouldn't. In this last part, I don't think everyone was on the same page. And that's really the bottom line you take from all of it. He saw a front office that was out of sorts. You talk about whether that's because of Jeff Wilpon, who sees himself as a de facto GM, brings in his good buddy Bertie Van Wagenen, and there's a power struggle there. Whether there's the analytical department who is or isn't being factored in to these decisions. There's just a lot going on there, and the Mets did not have a clear direction. Here is something that I had to look at. You look at the numbers of the money that was spent this offseason. Rick Porcello ends up being Wheeler's replacement for $10 million, but only a day after they signed Michael Wacha to a $3 million deal with incentives to be that same replacement. So that's $13 million right there. Yoenis Cespedes went from making $29.5 million to a base salary that's only guaranteed to be $6 million right now. Now, if he makes the roster at some point, which we believe he will, that goes up to $11 million. Then there's $9 million in incentives that are tied to at-bats, which he likely won't hit all of them. But let's just say he does. That's a $20 million contract for Yoenis Cespedes. You do the math. You take the $9.5 million they saved from the original Cespedes contract, the $10 for Porcello, the $3 guaranteed for Wacha without even factoring in those incentives, you get a $22.5 million deal. The first year of Wheeler's contract is $21.5 million. And Wheeler is by far a better pitcher than Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha, and you roll that starting five out, not only are the Phillies weaker, and he circled back. He said, "the Phillies are giving me this offer. A division rival is about to sign me. Can you give me the same offer? Can you match? Can you come close to it?" And they don't even negotiate. Because who knows, maybe Wheeler takes five for 110. And that's a big mistake because I'm telling you, Zach Wheeler is a difference maker. You come through this offseason with a re-signed Zach Wheeler, Dellin Betances, an expectation that Cespedes might actually be healthy. You bring in Brad Brock. That's a great offseason. I'm applauding it. I mean, then they can really stack up with the Braves and compete. Now, can they compete? Absolutely. But I feel a lot more confident with Zach Wheeler every fifth day than Rick Porcello and or Michael Wacha. Now, another thing the Mets did this offseason is they made a trade to get Jake Marisnyk. I haven't mentioned this, but Juan Lagares has signed a deal with the San Diego Padres, which is a minor league contract that becomes a $1.4 million deal if he makes the roster with incentives that could push that deal to $2.5 million. There's also an opt-out date in March so that he can maybe test the market if somebody else is interested at the end of spring training. There's not that much of a difference between Juan Lagares and Jake Marisnyk. Marisnyk might play a little bit better defense, might have a little more power, but he was also on the Astros where we can't trust those numbers. And Brody is best friends with AJ Hinch, their former manager. And there's no way he did not know that was going on. I'm sorry. No way. Not a chance. So, with that all being said, the Mets probably could assign Juan Lagares to a major league contract worth $2 million and save $1.3 more right there, not giving up prospects, and had all the more money to throw at Zach Wheeler. So, when you look at these things, it just was a big misfire to not bring Wheeler back, especially when money really starts to come off your books over the next couple years. Cespedes' full contract will be off the books the following season. Ramos' money can start to come off the books. There was ways to keep Wheeler on this team moving forward. And as Noah Syndergaard potentially gets a monster payday and leaves the Mets, as Stroman could leave the Mets, having Wheeler and DeGrom at the top of their rotation could have been a solidifying force for the next 5 years. And the Mets cost themselves that opportunity. Now I'm going to close on this. My brother-in-law, Brado, listened to the podcast, even though he's a Cubs fan. And from the outsider perspective, I got this text message after the podcast I've been doing over the past week. Locked On Wilpons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your owner bleeps up every day. And ain't that the truth? Anyway, thank you for listening. Remember, subscribe to this show wherever you get your podcast. Also, don't forget, when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets.